Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right. We're back with the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. I'll be hosting this evening, and I am back once again with the full crew. I know for the last couple of days you've been getting used to just hearing, you know, myself and JR come in here, chop it up, talking about these prospects in the top five. But we got everybody back in here. You know, Miles and Yank have been taking some days off. We're going to get them back in here. We're going to put them back to work. So, before we jump into the episode, as always, we're going to go through and do these introductions. So, you know, JR, we've been hearing from you a lot lately, but, you know, we still want to know how you're doing on this day. So how are things, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. We're another day closer to the draft. The countdown has officially begun, so I'm excited.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And Miles, how are you doing? How are things going? How is your draft analysis coming along?
Things are going pretty good. Been pretty busy at work lately, so I'm tired. But draft analysis is going good.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And how's Teddy looking?
Teddy's, yeah.
Man,
either pain.
And last,
he's good though.
Okay, he's good. I mean, that's what we need. We need to know he's good. You know, he's not tearing up your stuff too much, letting you sleep a little bit.
Nah, he's been a lot better. He's starting to chill out.
Good stuff, good stuff. And last but certainly not least, the man, the myth, the legend, the actor extraordinaire. You can find him on your Twitter and Facebook feeds. Saxy Prince, what's going on, man?
All I got to say, man, is kun leyende no matter what. That's all I got to say.
Okay. Well, you know, we're starting things off, and, you know, I feel like I haven't talked to you in just a little while here. So, you know, I was messing around talking about, you know, I can see you on the feeds and stuff here lately. But, you know, you did recently, you know, drop a little something for us here. You want to talk about it for just a little bit before we jump into all this this NFL and draft talk here?
Are you talking about a trailer?
Yeah, man.
For sure. Yeah, no, I've had a few people ask me about it. Over the last few days, I appreciate everyone who, you know, just took a minute or two out of their day to just watch a trailer. So, I think I told you guys about this maybe like 6 months ago, sometime in October or something. I filmed a short film. It was, an exciting project. I was really happy to be a part of. The basis around the film is, you know, my character, Sonny. He is a single father who's also in college. Mom's no longer in the picture, and you know, you kind of get to see the trials and tribulations he goes through each and every day, just having a very, very young daughter going to college as well, and then kind of a wrench in the, I guess, his life kind of gets thrown at him on his doorstep. So he's trying to go through all the feelings and emotions of all of that happened. So it's a short film, so it's probably only be about 15, 20 minutes, if that. But I think the story is really compelling. The message within the movie is compelling. It's a different role than I've ever done. And that's what, that's another reason why I was so attracted to the movie. We're actually doing a premiere screening 2 weeks from this Saturday on the 28th from 11 to 2. So, you know, I could post the link to the Eventbrite to just reserve tickets. I'm pretty sure it's free. So, you know, if you have a few hours, you can come and check out the premiere. I think it's going to be fantastic. My supporting cast was amazing. Cast and crew was phenomenal. They all great human beings, fun to work with. The entire short film was fantastic. Like I said, it has a great message and a very interesting story. So, that's my little promo plug for it. It's called Heart Wound. So, I hope everyone enjoys it.
And Jamie Foxx's uncle's in it.
Yes, Jamie.
I'm just going to roll with that. Jamie Foxx's uncle's in it. So, you know, you definitely want to go check that out. Yeah. Well, I know you guys are probably hoping that we're done with shilling, but we're not, because if you've been listening for the last week here, at the start of all the top fives, before we really get down to business, you know, got to remind everyone, JR put out the best value in the draft community, his wonderful NFL draft guide, complete with his big board, position by position breakdowns, analysis, scheme fits, player comps, all of that. And it's only $5. And the proceeds go to charity. So you get to get a great value, get a great deal for yourself while helping out in the community. It's awesome stuff. Great work by JR. As I said, the best value that you can find for a draft guide in this draft season. So go on and make that purchase. Just hop over to climbingthepocket.com, click on the 2018 NFL draft link, PayPal, send the money, get the guide, prosper. Okay. I feel like we got all the business stuff out of the way for now. Let's hop into it. Let's talk about some things. So, you know, it is a relatively slow time in the NFL calendar, but, you know, short of the, you know, the Rams, you know, buying everybody, every now and again, there are some things, there's some news. And the big news that popped up today was Jarvis Landry getting all the money. So, you know, we're talking wide receivers. We're going to switch it up. We're going to start with Miles on this one. Miles, what are your thoughts? Because I know Jarvis Landry can be a very polarizing figure, player. What are your thoughts on all this money the Browns are giving Jarvis Landry, given kind of his player profile to date as a professional wide receiver?
I think overall, I mean, I think it's a little steep. Definitely think it's something that I expected him to make a big amount of money or to command a lot of money just because of the type of player he's proven to be in terms of hitting the market, being young, and his overall numbers. I think he's got the most receptions in a 4-year span in NFL history or something like that. So that definitely helps his resume there. But the Browns have the money to do it. It tells me that they like the expectations of what the plan is for Jarvis Landry. Doesn't mean it's going to work out, but to me, it says that that's what they see a vision with him in place. And I think I'm hoping it means it's a better overall production in terms of yards per route run, yards per reception, stuff like that. I'm just hoping it's yards per reception. I'm just hoping it means, you know, they do a little bit more with him in terms of making him more than just a gadget player that he was in Miami, because I think he has a skill set to do more than what he did in Miami. He's not a deep threat. He's not anything like that, but I think he can command the middle of the field. He can be that guy that can work the intermediate routes and on that level. So, like I said, I don't know. I don't hate it. The Browns have the money. The Browns need playmakers. They wanted to lock up a young playmaker that they like, that they just traded, you know, basically, you know, they didn't really trade too much for. So, I don't hate it. A little too much for my taste, but I like Landry. I think he's a good player. So I think it was, they wanted to make sure they got the deal done. So they might've gotten a little higher than they probably wanted to.
All right. And JR, I guess I want to ask you something that Miles kind of touched on there in terms of the role that Jarvis Landry has played since coming into the NFL. So, I mean, he was kind of a gadgety player, ton of targets, but not really going down the field. He was a chain mover, but the type of throws that he was typically getting weren't really the type of throws that are, you know, adding a ton of value to your offense. Even though, you know, slot receivers and, you know, slot points are good, it's been the general consensus that, you know, the slot, because it is easier to get open in the slot and those targets are closer to the line of scrimmage, that you don't necessarily need, you know, an elite talent or a great talent to catch those passes. They're considered the easier catches. So I think we're all in agreement that, you know, Jarvis Landry is a playmaker. He's a baller in the role that he's been asked to do. He's done it probably better than anyone else in the league. But why, I guess, from what you've seen on tape with him, do you feel that, you know, multiple coaching staffs now have kind of pigeonholed him into that, I guess we'll say, lower value type of wide receiver role? And, you know, with this money that he's going to get, do you think he's capable of taking on a different kind of role now that he's going to be playing with the Browns?
Well, first and foremost, I really dislike the contract. I mean, getting $15 million a year for a slot receiver that's a chain mover or a guy that you use a lot on third downs or third and medium to long situations or even short situations. I just don't think he's worth that kind of money. You're talking about he's getting paid like guys like DeAndre Hopkins and Antonio Brown and guys of that nature. So obviously he doesn't bring the well-rounded or explosive skill set that they do. But as far as the role that Jarvis Landry plays in, I think he maximizes it to his perfection. He's not flashy or anything like that. He's not a guy that's going to generate a lot of explosive plays. But like I said, he's a guy that you need as far as that reliable go-to target on third down situations, that guy that can get you that first down when you do need it, or that guy can really eat or take advantage in the short and intermediate type situations. Now, with Miami's scheme, they really didn't ask him to do a whole bunch farther down the field than 10 yards because they understand that his strengths aren't farther than 10 yards down the field because he's just not going to take the top off of a defense like a normal slot receiver would. So his skill set is more in that short to intermediate range, like I said, that guy that can be that go-to reliable chain mover. And I like this role that he's in Cleveland. He's surrounded by guys like Josh Gordon, David Njoku, and Corey Coleman. So he's not that guy, that big play threat. That's more of Josh Gordon and Corey Coleman's role. But if you ask him to dominate those underneath areas and take advantage of the attention that those other guys are going to get, I think he's perfect in that role. So I dislike the contract, but I like the role that he's going to be in. And I mean, he's a guy that's a stat pattern. That's the best way to put it. He gets a whole bunch of targets. Now he's not going to have a whole bunch of yards because he doesn't generate that high yardage down the field. So he's not going to have that high volume of yards like we're seeing those big time names get, those higher paid guys like Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, and Julio Jones, because he doesn't have the plays down the field. But for the role he's in, I like what he can bring to the table in Cleveland.
Makes some sense.
I'd be really curious.
Oh, go ahead,
real
man.
Quick. I'd just be kind of curious. I'm just kind of curious. And I wonder, you know, Adam Gase, it really doesn't matter to him anymore. But from 2016 to 2017, why they made him play even closer to the line of scrimmage? Because in 2016, he averaged 12.1 yards per catch. I'm not saying that's anything special, but this last season, he averaged 8.8 yards per catch. So, like, I'd be kind of curious why they decided to lessen that, because he had 18 less receptions, or 18 more receptions in 2017, but he had basically 200, almost 300 yards less too. So I'd just be kind of curious why they decided to change his role up to make him more of an overall gadget player in 2017, when 2016 he was more of that intermediate route runner, you know, guy who worked the middle of the field a little bit more often, and you know, that 10 to 15 to 20 yard range instead of the 5 to 8 yard range. So I'd just be kind of curious why they did that.
Is it too easy just to say Jay Cutler?
That, I mean, I thought about that, but I yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
I mean they did pull that man, you know, off the street and bring him up in the air with no off season, without working out at all. So I guess I'll just chalk up any regression to the Miami skill players to Smoking Jay.
And that's a good point, though.
To Smoking Jay. But before we move off Jarvis Landry, we got to get Saxy Prince in here, because you know, for all the grief we give him about a lot of stuff, Saxy Prince has done actually a pretty good job of you know, pegging contract values for some players here as we were going through last season. So, Money Man Prince, what would you pay Jarvis Landry for the role that he's kind of occupied career to date?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Miles and JR. I think that you know, basically what it kind of boils down to, like, $15 million per year. I think they might have given him maybe too much in guarantees, which is, I think, probably the bigger issue that I had with that, because, you know, regardless of whether he can carve out even a bigger role for himself in the Cleveland's offense, you know, if he continues to do that, you know, continue to have that kind of limited role, but he maximizes it, I don't really feel that to be, you know, $47 million guaranteed. I think the issue that we're going to probably see with Cleveland is trying to expand that role, and I hope that they try to do. And Jarvis can show that he, you know, can take on a bigger role, be more of a deep threat, be more of a guy that can win on the outside even more so than he is just a slot. I personally don't like it unless a guy can prove that he can continually and like consistently win on the outside. You know, we're going to talk about this next, but like a guy like Stephon Diggs, who's proven that he can win both in the slot and both on the outside. Those are the kinds of guys that I'm giving those higher wide receiver contracts to. So I think Cleveland thinks he'll be something, but it remains to be seen. So I'm not a fan of the contract, but kind of like it was already said, Cleveland does have the money to spend, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it was the right decision.
Okay, so you're you don't like the contract, you don't like the guarantees. I guess what would you give him in terms of, you know, dollars per year if it was you?
Yeah, I mean, because of the fact that he is so crucial to, or he's done such a good job at you know, maximizing the role that he's been given, which we don't see as many NFL players like really do it as well as Jarvis Landry, even if it is a limited role. And, you know, Jarius Wright was another guy who he was really only brought on third downs or, you know, kind of like crucial yard to game type plays. And you saw him carve out a huge role within the Vikings offense. So as far as Jarvis Landry, who's probably one of the best of the game, specifically at what he does, you know, I could see, you know, $8 million, $8.5 million, maybe $9 million. But 15, I think. Prince. Yes.
Did you compare Jarvis Landry's role to Jarius Wright's role?
No, I'm saying that guys who obviously have, I don't want to say limited skill set, but obviously within their offense, they have a specific role that they have to play. Jarius Wright had a very specific role in the Vikings offense. We hoped that he could have been, I mean, when he first came to the league, that he could have been more. He could have been that outside. He could have been a deep threat. But, I mean, as the years kind of went on, he was really kind of shrunk into that third down, reliable guy, you know, sometimes from the slot every so often and whatnot. I was only comparing it in terms of, you know, the skill set comparatively to the other wide receivers on the field did diminish the amount of money that he probably could have made had he been able to develop into an all-around wide receiver. So that's kind of why I diminished Jarvis in that respects, where, you know, he hasn't really proven to be a consistent, you know, consistently good on the outside, or even being able to be more of a deep threat than he is, than that kind of that limited role who's he just racks up a bunch of catches every game.
Yeah, I missed 2013 Jarius Wright. He averaged 16.7 yards per catch.
Yeah, he was going off on in 2013.
Well, we don't need to go down. We don't need to take that walk down memory lane. We don't want Prince tearing up on the podcast today. Your next big, I guess, piece of NFL news, not really news, it's been rumor, it's been innuendo, it's been hinted at for a while now. And so I'm just going to go kind of rapid reaction with y'all here. I want some predictions from you guys, because, you know, there's a lot of smoke in Dallas right now around the man Dez Bryant. So, JR, what are your thoughts, man? Dez Bryant can be playing for the Cowboys at the start of next year, or are they actually going to cut him and try to use that money someplace else?
I think they're going to let him go. That's the only reason why I think they will hold a meeting with him if he was willing to take a pay cut already. I don't really see the purpose of having an actual sit-down meeting with him. I think this meeting is to inform him, or Jerry Jones to inform him, that the team is going in a different direction. We all know there's cap strap right now, and they really need some cap flexibility because, you know, they have to sign a guy like Zach Martin who's going to command big money. And obviously they don't want to let him hit the open market. And I think sacrificing Dez is, I think that's good in order to save Zach Martin or re-sign Zach Martin, because I think you can find the production that Dez has given the past few years in this draft with a young guy. And I think they need some more weapons on the perimeter. They're really old on the perimeter, not explosive at all. I mean, outside of Dez, Terrence Williams, we all know he's just a guy. Jason Witten, he's a shell of himself at this point, and he signed like 3 or 4 more years. So they're obviously in a bad situation with that contract as well. And I think they need to get younger at their skill positions, and it needs to surround Dak, because we know Dak goes as his supporting cast goes, and he's a guy that needs to be uplifted by his weapons in order to succeed, and the Cowboys just don't have that right now.
That makes sense. Miles, what are your thoughts, man? Dez, is he staying or is he going?
Kind of like what Jarrett said, it probably does mean that he's leaving, but for me, I'm kind of surprised just the fact that I don't see a rush to make this decision. I mean, you could wait for 2 weeks and kind of see how the draft plays out before you decide Dez's fate, because cutting him now and cutting him, you know, in a little over 2 weeks doesn't really change anything. I mean, yeah, they could probably go and try to get somebody now before the draft if they wanted to, just to make that sure. But I mean, I don't know. To me, I'd rather go into the draft. If you can get a guy you like to help come in and be a replacement, at least then you know you have someone else in place. Because right now, if you were to cut Dez, they'd have Allen Hurns, Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley, and Ryan Switzer to go with Jason Witten. I mean, that's not anything to write home about. So, and I guess you know young guys like Noah Brown too, but they don't really do too much there. I'm kind of surprised if they were to do it tomorrow, why they wouldn't just wait until the draft just to kind of see how it plays out and see who they could potentially get. And then, because you don't have to sign your draft picks right away anyways. So, I guess I'd be kind of surprised why they do it this early, but I guess it could be for them to be nice to Dez, I guess, and show him the respect that and appreciation that he did bring for them for all those years, and then let him go find his team before the draft. I'm not sure.
Okay, and Prince, you going to make it a clean sweep? Is Dez leaving?
Yeah, I don't really see any reason for the Cowboys to bring him back. Even the pay cut, in my opinion, just for what he has brought to the offense over the last several years, I don't think it's worth it. I think the Dallas really needs to consider, you know, just bringing in a bunch of weapons in for Dak to work with, some young guys who can come and contribute right away. You know, so I could see them drafting a wide receiver with their pick, and then, you know, maybe double dipping and getting a third round guy that intrigues them. So yeah, I don't see any reason why they should keep him. I think it'd be smart for them to cut him.
All right, one word answers from each of you, because you know you guys can't get a little chatty from time to time. Okay, we won't say one word. Just give me a city or a team name. That's all you get. Saxy Prince, they cut Dez. Where does he end up?
Washington.
Miles.
Seattle.
JR.
San Francisco.
Oh, Jimmy Jesus. I like it. I
was going to say that one too. I was going to say that one too.
Whatever, Miles. You're on the record. We got you. You can't just go and try to steal JR's thunder after he puts it out there.
Hey, he gets to replace Jimmy Graham in Seattle. I think that's a good
The disrespect. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit of Vikings. You know, we've been doing a lot of draft stuff, a lot of NFL stuff. Let's talk some Vikings here. And Prince hinted at it earlier. The first thing that kind of popped through Vikings Twitter after the Landry news was announced was, oh, my God, Stefon Diggs is about to get all the money. And, I mean, they're probably right. Stefon Diggs probably isn't about to get all the money. So, I guess, JR, what are your thoughts on that? Kind of, you know, how do the Landry, you know, negotiations affect Stefon Diggs? And I guess, what are your thoughts on what seems to be a bit of an undercurrent among certain members of the Vikings fan base that feel like Stefon Diggs is overrated or not someone that we really should pay?
Yeah, I've always been confused by that, why people were saying Stefon Diggs shouldn't be paid or considered to be paid like some of these other receivers have been paid. I mean, we saw guys like Davante Adams get paid, deservedly so. I think he's a good receiver. Jarvis Landry obviously just got paid, and I think Stefon Diggs is just as good, if not better, than those guys. And, I mean, even guys like Allen Robinson, that got paid this offseason coming off injury. So I think the biggest thing or the biggest enigma with Diggs and his fan base is that he hasn't played an entire 16 games so far. So that's kind of leaving a little shadow against fans from paying him. But I think he's well worth the money. And I think he's worth what Jarvis Landry just got. I don't know if he'll actually get that much, but I think he probably will get in that range. between that Jarvis Landry and Devontae Adams range. I think Devontae Adams got, I want to say 14.
Me and you don't quote me on that, though. That's just off the top of my head. And I think he's well worth. Yeah, and I think he's well worth that because I think he's just an explosive of an option as those guys are out on the perimeter. And he provides you with a similar skill set as both of those guys. Obviously, I think he's much better than what Jarvis Landry is from an explosiveness standpoint and what he offers on the perimeter. So I would be fine with paying Stephon Diggs that type of money, and I don't have any problems against that. Now, a lot of fans have to understand that Jarvis Landry and Stephon Diggs are very close. They're guys that work out together in the offseason as well. So I'm sure Stephon Diggs was really happy to see him get paid, and I think he actually posted something about him getting paid as well. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what Diggs does end up getting paid, whether that's from Minnesota or elsewhere.
Yes, sir. And Miles, what are your thoughts about the Diggs negotiations? And I guess, do you feel like Landry getting his money really affects anything? I mean, do you feel like, Diggs and his agent kind of already had a dollar figure in mind or because that's the first thing. Anytime any receiver gets paid, it's, oh my God, Stephon Diggs is going to want all the money. Do you see those things as being directly correlated, or do you think Diggs already kind of has an idea of what he wants?
I think he already had an idea. I mean, you saw a guy hit the open market in Sammy Watkins who got more money, than Jarvis Landry did. So I don't think Jarvis Landry getting paid really changes too much. I think you could compare some of the, like, I'm not going to say I think Diggs is the better receiver than Jarvis Landry, but in some of the usage that the Vikings have used Stephon Diggs, especially back in 2016, there's some comparability there. So I could see Diggs looking at that number and being like, if Jarvis Landry as a slot receiver can get that kind of money, there's no way in hell that I shouldn't be able to get that kind of money based off the production he's had over the last couple of seasons, especially. So, I think he's definitely looking probably for that 14 plus range, per range. And I don't see why he shouldn't get it. I think what bothers me the most is fans seem more worried about what Adam Thielen's going to think than what Stephon Diggs gets paid. Like, I don't think it really should matter. Like, if the Vikings plan, and I would hope it is, a big priority for them is to sign Stephon Diggs to an extension. Adam Thielen signed his contract. Like, I think at the same time, like, they can still sign Diggs and let's say they sign Diggs this offseason and still let Adam Thielen play out this season with his current contract because he just signed it last season. So, and then they can kind of revisit it next offseason. So I don't really think that should be too much of a factor for fans to really think about, because at the end of the day, the Vikings are going to try to take care of all the guys that they want to keep. So Adam Thielen will get taken care of again if that's their plan. So I don't really see that as an issue. So I think Diggs will go out there and get the money he's deserved. And I think, the Vikings probably a big worry is, can he sustain a full 16 game season? Because he hasn't. I mean, his rookie year was the only year where he had the opportunity to play all 16 games, but they sat him for the first three or four. So that's probably the only reason he missed out there. But the last two seasons, he hasn't proven he's been able to stay healthy. So I think some of that could be part of their worry as to where the numbers probably might disconnect a little bit. But I think in the end, I think they'll figure out a way to get it done.
Yeah, and that is a funny dynamic there, how in some cases, players just need to play out the contract that they signed, because they signed that contract and, they should honor their obligation to the team. But in other cases, players trying to get their money are being greedy. It's, and then in other cases, players that signed their contract should hold out for more money because another player on the team got some money. Anywho,
which is, some players, if they hold out, they're selfish. And then some players, if they hold out, oh, yeah, but it makes sense that they'd hold out.
It's business. It's business. It's business. They should just do it because they're savvy businessmen, because it is just a business after all, until it's not. I don't know. It's very weird. Anyway, Saxy Prince, what are your thoughts on Diggs? And I'm going to ask you the question a different way. At what point would you tap out on paying Diggs? So, right now we're looking at things. Antonio Brown's the top paid wide receiver in the game for going average per year. So he's getting 17. Mike Evans is getting 16.5. DeAndre is getting 16.2. Then you got Sammy at 16. Jarvis at almost 16. AJ at 15. What's the maximum amount you're paying Diggs?
How much is Kirk Cousins making this year?
Boy, if you don't stop.
it's a really good question because, I know I'm an advocate of paying Stephon Diggs and getting him as close as to, without completely overshooting, really paying him what he wants. But I think no more than 16, and that's for me, that's even pretty steep just because of the injury history. I think 16 would kind of be my cap. I'd probably give him a little bit more, in terms of maybe front end guarantees, but to escalate it more than probably 16, I think, 16 is even high, but per year, yeah, it'd probably be around 16. I mean, he's probably been our best wide receiver we've had on this team, since Randy Moss. I mean, I'm not trying to speak hyperbolically, but.
Oh, the pitchforks are coming out.
They are. I'm serious. The amount of things that you can do with this guy, both from the 20s and then obviously within the red zone, he to me, he's our clear wide receiver one, and I'm okay with paying him like a wide receiver one because I with both him and Adam Thielen, yeah, it would be great to have a wide receiver three, whatever the case is, but you can win a lot of football games with those two at the helm, and I would not want to see a guy like that go play for another team or, not in the Vikings uniform. So my number right now is 16. That might change depending on maybe another guy gets paid before Diggs gets paid coming up. But right now I think 16 is my number.
The thing I like the most about Prince and the way he lets it flow on the podcast is that in one sentence he will say, I don't want to speak hyperbolically. But then in the next sentence he'll be, well, Diggs is the clear number one on the Vikings. Like Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs don't have a pretty comparable statistical skill set. Like, I also agree that Stephon Diggs is wide receiver one, but let's not act like Adam Thielen is like way behind him on the list.
But I think with that, it's, when I say clear wide receiver one, I don't think that necessarily has to be a knock on Adam Thielen. And that's, I think that's what we get into is when we say one guy's the number one and another guy's the number two, it's like, okay, well, this guy is the worst wide receiver. So in my opinion, where you can line up Stephon Diggs, not that you can't with Adam Thielen, but you've seen him literally being moved all across the formation. I think he can do a little bit more than Adam Thielen can do, but that's not a knock on Adam Thielen. I think that just speaks to how good Stephon Diggs is, which is why I'm willing to pay him.
Okay. All right. That's fair. That's fair. And I guess receiver isn't at the top of the list based on what Prince just said. But, JR, I know you've been doing a bit of work on this. I guess really everyone here is. And, Prince, I think you said you were really, really going to start really going deep on it last weekend. So we're going to run through this here. And each of you gets one. And you can't repeat what the person ahead of you said. So, because, Prince, I'm going to let you go first on this one. I'm going to let you go first. Biggest draft need for the Vikings. What you got for me here?
I'm going to go with offensive guard.
Okay. Why are we going with guard?
I think for a while the Vikings haven't really had a solidified all five players on the offensive line are the clear starter. And I just feel like, obviously, with Joel Berger retiring, Nick Easton's obviously coming back from injury. You don't really know what Danny Isadora is. You don't really know what that left guard position is. I think you need to at least solidify one of the two positions, right or left guard. And then, obviously, whoever, if Nick Easton's healthy, he obviously can either continue to compete for the left guard position. Or, if right guard becomes the competition, you can continue to do that. So, I think with what we have on offense, I think a guard, either right or left, would be great for this offense.
Okay. Miles, how about you, man? What are you going with? Biggest draft need for the Vikings that is not a guard?
Cornerback.
Say it again, Miles.
cornerback.
See, you know.
So I think
I thought he said I thought he said quarterback. I was
Prince. Prince.
Anyways, go ahead. Prince.
All right, go ahead. So cornerback, man. Why? And we got Xavier Rhodes, we got Trey Waynes, we got, you know, Mackenzie Alexander, who, I mean, he had the best passer rating against on the whole team. Why we need a cornerback, especially, you know, biggest need? We can take a cornerback in the first round.
I mean, Mac had a fourth of the snaps the other guys did, but yeah, I like Mac though. I think I'm looking more, I guess, past 2018, just because I think the team's going to have to decide who they want to pay between Mackenzie Alexander or Trey Waynes. I don't think they're going to be able to keep both guys. And I think, you know, in this league, it's proven that you need at least, you know, three quality starting caliber corners. And I think, you know, you need to figure that out between Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander. You know, do they pick up Trey Waynes' fifth-year option? They have until, what, I think the first week in May to kind of decide that. So we'll know more, I think, you know, we'll know more about how they feel about Trey Waynes by then, I think. But, you know, whoever they choose between those two, that's fine. But, you know, the other one's going to be gone. You need to kind of figure out who that third corner is, and you're not going to be able to pay a third corner a lot of money. So might as well, you know, might as well start developing one now that can eventually take over for one of those two guys down the road, whether it's in the nickel or on the outside. So I think that's a really important position. I know Zim likes to have his corners anyways. I don't think you can have I don't think, you know, I don't think there's, you can have enough. You can't have enough cornerbacks, you know, on your roster, good quality cornerbacks.
You really can't. You really can't.
So why not? I mean, you have a fourth cornerback who eventually could turn into your third cornerback, who could potentially even turn into your second cornerback, depending on where you draft, who you draft, you know, where the expectation is to play him. So I think that's a really big need. And I think we'll see them make a move there, and you know, one of the first, you know, two or three picks.
Perfect, perfect. And you know, we made this rough on you, but you are, you know, the resident draft analyst here. So I know that, you know, even though Prince and Miles have gone with, you know, two of probably the things that you might have said, what are you going for number three here, JR? Biggest draft needs for the Vikings.
Can I give you two?
Oh, see, look at you showing off now. But yeah, you can give us two.
So the first one is defensive tackle. I think they need somebody behind Sheldon Richardson. Everybody knows that Jaleel Johnson is there, but after that, they don't have any depth there. They don't have a backup one technique behind Linval Joseph right now. And there's a lot of intriguing names in this draft that they could target. So I would say defensive tackle or nose tackle is definitely one. The other one is tight end. I think they need to find somebody or reliable receiving target behind Kyle Rudolph, who's getting up there in age. I believe he's turning 30 this year, if he's not 30 already, and his contract starts to become pricey as far as total money, but he doesn't have any dead money left. So they will be able to part ways with him if they do want to draft a guy this year and be able to develop him and pair him with David Morgan if they do decide to part ways with Kyle Rudolph with his contract starting to go up and get pricey. So I would say tight end to give them another receiving option.
All right. I like all of those options. And I'm going to go off the script a little bit here because it's a talking point that came up on Eric Eager, friend of the show, also co-host of mine on the Pocket Protectors podcast. He obviously, I think everyone knows, Eric works for Pro Football Focus, and he has a podcast, The Forecast, very good pod. And he and his co-host were having a conversation. So I want to ask you guys, and we can go through this pretty quickly here. Would you want, if you were starting a team or starting a defense, would you want to have the best defensive tackle in all the league or the best cover corner in all the league? And I'll start with you, JR.
This is tough for me. I think both of them are impact positions, but I would rather have the cornerback because you're talking about a guy that can cut off half of the field. And I know we talked about this earlier. We were talking about Aaron Donald or Jalen Ramsey. And I would rather have Jalen Ramsey. I know that's a tough decision because Aaron Donald is so dominant, but I think there's ways you can manipulate around him as far as scheme-wise stuff. But you talk about a corner like Jalen Ramsey that can cut off half the field and just make things so much easier on your defense. So I would rather have that shutdown corner.
Okay, Miles, how about you, man? You going with the best defensive tackle or the best cover corner?
Yeah, for me, I think I'm gonna go the opposite way. I think I'm gonna go defensive tackle just because, you know, some of the points JR had, I think for a defensive tackle, it's kind of a lot harder to scheme around those guys. I mean, you have to, even with the double teams and everything like that, you double team a guy like Aaron Donald, you're opening up a lot of room for the guy next to him. And then in this case would be an Ndamukong Suh. So I think it's, you know, pick your poison type situation where, you know, you have a Jalen Ramsey on one side where you can kind of, depending on who his second cornerback is, you can, you know, you just attack that guy and you don't even worry about Jalen Ramsey. So I think on a play-by-play basis, a guy like Aaron Donald or, you know, an elite defensive tackle can disrupt any and every play. A cornerback doesn't always do that just because, you know, of the splits between run and pass and, you know, the screen game, stuff like that, getting out in space. But even working within, you know, the interior, I think it's really hard to double team an elite defensive tackle. You know, Fletcher Cox, Aaron Donald, and Ndamukong Suh, Linval Joseph, some of these guys, even when they get double teamed, it doesn't even matter. They're high impact players, they're high motor guys. You know, they're getting the ball constantly. And like I said, they can disrupt any single play on a consistent basis, and they can be, in my opinion, a little bit more consistent. And I think the rules, with the way the rules are in the NFL nowadays too, it's a lot easier to attack a cornerback and kind of even an elite one and kind of, you know, get calls made on them just because they can't really use their hands as often. They can't do a lot that they'd like to or they probably should be able to do just because the rules kind of favor the offensive side of the ball when it comes to passing. So I think that's kind of where it differs a little bit too.
Okay. Prince, as is often the case, we need you to break the tie. Which way are you going here?
Man, like, first I was with JR, and then Miles made some, like, really compelling points as far as D-tackle. But I think I'm going to go back to the corners just because I love maybe my decision was, like, outside of football because I think both things are fantastic. But, you know, just watching guys like Jalen Ramsey, Marcus Peters, guys with, like real personality can bring you, like, either personality or they can bring you leadership to your football team. I just think that shutdown corner is where, you know, so many teams, like there are a lot of teams in the league that don't have a shutdown corner. And to obviously have a disrupted pass rusher or even defensive tackle in the middle, it's fantastic. But because of the fact that there's been that shift to being more pass heavy, you have to have at least one guy, you know, could take away his side of the field. And I think with defensive tackle can be just as disruptive. But I think it's a lot harder as far as processing and whatnot if, you know, a quarterback's best guy is getting taken out of the game. So I'm going to go with corner on this one.
Okay, and I really don't know that there's a wrong answer for this. So, like, the interesting point that was brought up on the pod was that on a per-play basis, cornerback is more valuable than defensive tackle on a per-play basis. But the other part of the conversation I thought made it interesting as you're kind of building a team over the long term is that defensive tackle play is more consistent year over year, probably for a lot of the reasons that Miles brought up when he was saying, you know, the rules and things like that. It's a lot harder to be a good corner year over year over year over year. You see a lot more movement at the top from a corner, whereas like your top defensive tackles generally repeat a similar performance from year to year. So I think that's what made it such an interesting thing is that there's really no wrong answer on it is that, you know, yeah, per play, you're not going to get as much out of the defensive tackle, but over the long term, maybe you do get more out of that position. But, you know, like Yinka and JR both said, the cornerback's more valuable. If he's playing well, he's more valuable. It's just harder for him to continue to play well. So yeah, yo, interesting aside, good conversation. Love all the points that everyone made there. And a couple more questions for you guys before we get up out of here, because we've been talking a lot this week. We're talking a lot, so we should probably wrap this one up here because I imagine the listeners, you know, they're probably getting a little bit sick of hearing our voices here. So we're going to run through this again here. And you told us all your positions and needs. I guess, you know, Prince, who should the Vikings take at 30? You know, based on what you just said.
Sorry, repeat that one time. My headphones came out.
Oh man, I need you to get it together. We're trying to run a professional podcast here, you know.
Yeah.
Who should the Vikings take at 30? What are you doing if you're on the clock at that pick and you need to make it? What should the Vikings do?
And they have to take the pick at 30. They can't do anything else.
Yeah, we're not trading down. It's not me making the pick. It's you making the pick. You got to pick somebody.
Obviously, if my draft crush Isaiah Wynn's not there, you know, Will Hernandez, he could be still there. I am taking, I will take the best available, offensive lineman at 30.
Okay. All right. So it doesn't matter guard, tackle, whatever. You're just going to take the best one available.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to take the best one available.
Okay. All right. Miles, how about you? I feel like you probably have a couple names ready to go here.
I do. There's a few guys I think who probably could be there that I think, you know, depending on how the board falls, since we're getting rid of trades, where I think there's a few guys that'd be there at 30 that the Vikings would love to take. I think for me, the one guy that I keep coming around to, and I think who's more of a guard than he is a tackle, I don't know if I expect him to be there just because of the flexibility to play tackle, but Connor Williams has really intrigued me as of late, just because I think the way I've watched him and the way I've heard, you know, some of the scouting reports on him is I think a lot of people see him as a right guard, you know, kind of. He's not quite as stout as Brandon Scherff, but I think there's some of those similarities, you know, coming from a tackle position to and sliding over to guard. But I think he's got the movement skills to do it. His arms are a little shorter, you know, which is part of the problem for why, and his reach for part of the problem why I think people see the struggle at tackle. But I think Connor Williams would be a great pick at pick 30, just because I think his flexibility and his, you know, he could, you know, whether they did want to keep him at even right tackle and move Remmers into guard, I think his flexibility there just makes him an intriguing prospect.
Okay. JR, how about you?
Yeah, like I said, I don't think they need to force an offensive lineman pick that early because, like I always say, a lot of people on the internet overslot interior offensive linemen. We rarely ever see NFL teams prioritize them high in the first round or in the first round period unless they're elite. And Quentin Nelson seems to only be that elite guy this year that you know is just going to be a plug-and-play starter. Immediately and play at an elite level from day one. So I don't necessarily think they need to force a guy or an offensive lineman that early, but I think I got a sneaky suspicion that I think they might address cornerback early. You talk about it. I think a guy like Mike Hughes is going to be there for them.
Miles, it's your boy.
And Mike Hughes checks a lot of boxes for them. He could play nickel.
I was going to go there too.
He can play outside, and you talk about a guy that can be your kick returner from day one as well. So I think a guy like Mike Hughes is going to intrigue them at 30.
Okay.
Mike Hughes, Taven Bryan, Isaiah Oliver.
Yep.
Even though Isaiah Oliver goes a little higher.
Yeah, and, you know, Mike Hughes, Isaiah Oliver, those guys play premium positions. I would rather have them than a guard in the first. I hope you guys just peep that JR called y'all people on the internet, by the way. After you went in there and talked about interior linemen, JR was just like, people on the internet keep talking about.
No, I wasn't. In general.
You know, I'm just stirring stuff up here. And last question for y'all. I mean, and I feel like I know where JR is going to be with it. But, you know, folks are really talking now, and I've seen a lot of mocks where, you know, the Vikings go Isaiah Wynn in round one and then come back and go like Billy Price or Frank Ragnow or something like that in round two. And you know, the idea there is, you know, Kirk Cousins not great under pressure, you know, was very good when Washington had and, you know, really, really strong offensive line around him. So you build that wall up around Kirk. Our outside receivers are amazing. Dalvin's coming back. This is everything we need for Kirk Cousins to be elite. Just what are y'all's thoughts on doing that? Just going all in on building up the O-line to maximize, you know, Kirk Cousins' skill set in this year. JR, does that work for you? Is that something you would do, or are you going in a different way?
I mean, I'm fine with building it up, but I don't necessarily think they need to do it early as far as doubling up on two guys in the top of the first three rounds. I just think that's a bit of an overkill, and I think they have other areas that they need to address. The only real glaring hole that they have on the offensive line to me is right guard, and that's just assuming that they leave Mike Remmers at right tackle. I think they're fine with a guy like Nick Easton at left guard. Obviously, Reef is the left tackle, and Elfline is the center. So the only glaring hole that they have right now up front is right guard, and I think they don't need to address or double up in that position early on. I think there's some other areas that they should address as well.
All right, that makes sense. Miles, what about you? What are you doing?
Yeah, I've been in the same boat as JR. I think Nick Easton's a solid left guard, and I think it's his second year as a starter. He's, you know, before he was, you know, rotating in it from center and guard. So I think, you know, getting another year under his belt as the starting left guard is important, just because I think, you know, he's proven that he is a quality starting guard. So I think you let him continue to grow and develop there. So you go and get, you know, your day one starter at right guard, and I think you have a solid offensive line, and you have guys that you know you're still developing, and Danny Isadora, and you brought in Josh Andrews, and you have Tom Compton. So you have guys that are in place that can kind of handle some of those duties. So I've been saying for a while that I kind of expect this draft to be similar to what was happening last year, where, you know, they go best player available with one of their top picks, you know, and that could be offensive line still, but, you know, they go offensive line early, they get their day one started offensive line, but then they address other needs with their earlier picks too. So I think, you know, there's an opportunity to do that. And then you come back on day three and grab another guy for, you know, for depth and, you know, continued competition. So I think that's kind of where I see this. I see a similar draft to last year, but I mean, obviously you have the first round pick this year, but you don't have a fourth. So there's some of that, like, I think they're going to move around quite a bit, go grab the guys that they want, that they feel they need to fill certain positions and kind of solidify those positions earlier in the draft. And then, you know, make day three this the trade back and trade and get, you know, six picks on day three type of thing, kind of what they did last year.
That makes sense. And Saxy Prince, bring us home. What are you doing? Because, I mean, you know, you seem to be a proponent of O-line there in the first. You coming back in the second and doing it again?
No, it was mostly because I was just like, I think cornerback is a fantastic pick, but if you had to pick a 30, I like offensive linemen, but I definitely would love to trade back. Three second round picks it would be a dream for me. I think for the maybe even for the Vikings too. I don't know what Rick Spielman wants to do, but I would love to ride at pick 30. That is where maybe a team who didn't take a quarterback in the top 10 or whatever the case is, gets really itchy. They want to trade up, or maybe even the top five who maybe didn't take a quarterback, gets really itchy, wants to trade up and grab a guy who's falling. That definitely could be a Josh Allen. That definitely could be a Lamar Jackson type guy that, you know, Vikings can, you know, maybe get another pick out of. So I would love it if we could trade down only a few spots and really hit that top, still kind of top tier offensive lineman while still having, you know, a really good corner that's there. I want to move tight end. So you definitely could make all those picks in that second round. It would obviously, you wouldn't be able to have that fifth round option, but, you know, if you can get the guys that you really want to have and address those positions right away, I think you would have a lot more flexibility in the draft to, you know, move around and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay. All compelling points. I feel like that's it. I feel like there's nothing else really for us to cover. We're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Before we get out of here, just a friendly reminder, our top five series will continue next week. So, you know, with the top five series, we will continue to roll out position by position breakdowns, going, you know, a little bit deeper than we could go on a show like this, where we go in and, you know, I think next week is when we'll get Miles up in here to give us a little bit of his analysis to go along with the great work that JR has been doing so far. And, yeah, we will be releasing one of these mini episodes every night leading up until the draft. So the last big thing we'll be doing will be a podcast coming out on the Wednesday nights before the draft. So you'll stick with us here. We'll have all of your draft coverage. And yeah. And of course, if you haven't purchased JR's draft guide, go on and do that. But, you know, I've been talking about JR's draft guide a little bit here, I guess. Anybody else working on anything? Miles, I know you've been doing some stuff. Anything that's going to be published on the site? Prince, what you've been working on? Anything that's going to be coming up anywhere that people should be aware of? Any podcast appearances people should look for? Hint, hint, hint. Miles, what's up, man? How you doing?
Yeah, good. So I was on Cover One with Russell Bunnan and Brady Kelly. Brad, sorry. those guys do great work over there, and I was with so I was on that thing that drops tomorrow, and then I'm finalizing my the top five player rankings that I have for kind of for a mini pod series. I'm just finalizing the notes on those that I'll have probably published on the site.
Awesome. Sexy Prince, what you up to, man?
Well, yeah, I think you mentioned it earlier in the pod, but yeah, I finally have the weekend off, so I'm going to be doing a lot of digging into a lot of prospects from JR's guide, which is fantastic. It's going to be much easier to just kind of look through guys, see who everyone's been talking about for the last couple months, but then, you know, be able to do some of my own analysis and just looking through them. So I should probably have an article to coming out either this weekend, well, maybe not this weekend, but after the weekend is over. Just giving my thoughts, maybe some top five guys and maybe some guys to look out for that, you know, maybe caught my eye a little bit.
Love it. Love it. Love it. JR, any new work for you at this point? Or you taking a little bit of a moment to exhale after all the work that went into the draft guide?
Yeah. Taking a little moment to exhale and recharge the battery. But I've decided that I'm going to release a first round mock draft on day one of the draft. So the Thursday after next.
Boy. Okay. All right. Well, listeners, thanks for sticking with us. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on and recording. This has been the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. We got the full crew with you here. And yeah, we'll definitely be talking to you soon. Have a good one.